Hi, welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. Perloff here in the New York studio, Maggie in the home studio. A lot of interesting cowboy talk. I love what Dallas Morning News' Calvin Watkins said. Hey, they just paid a wide receiver. Got to have a quarterback to throw him the ball. It makes me optimistic, Maggie. We have a big show bet looming about whether the Cowboys re-sign Dak Prescott. Could be a lot of Waffle House food for the loser, which sounds like a good thing, but I'm talking about a lot of food. Maggie, I don't know. Calvin sort of hinted that it could be happening before the season. Could be happening, which would be awesome because that would mean you'd be eating 24 waffles in less than 24 hours.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Yes, I'm nervous now. Yeah. We made a bet about Dak Prescott and whether or not he'll be on the Cowboys next year, and I could potentially lose that bet before we even get to September, which would be sad for me. The bet is thus. Whoever loses has to sit at a Waffle House for 24 hours, and for every waffle they eat, 1 hour gets lopped off the time. Now, this is a send-up to a fantasy football draft, like a group of guys doing fantasy football, and that was the punishment for the loser. And we're borrowing liberally from those guys. Mike Sando is our guest from The Athletic. He's got his quarterback tiers, but Mike, what do you think? Dak Prescott on the Cowboys next year? Who's winning this bet? Who's eating these waffles?
I'll tell you one thing. In my day, I might only be there about 2 hours in my day. Now, I don't think I would be eating the waffles that fast, okay? In college, they used to make us divvy up the pizza when it arrived because this guy would just inhale the whole thing. So I have a storied, embarrassing past of eating. But I think Dak Prescott probably wants to be on the Cowboys and probably will be on the Cowboys long term. But I'm not sure when the deal is going to get done. It feels like Jerry Jones, certainly with Mike McCarthy, letting him go in his last year, and then the quarterback kind of being the next closest thing to the coach in terms of, hey, are we ever going to break through, right? And then you look at Dak's position. He's worked hard to get into a situation where he's set for life, and he also cannot be franchise tagged. So he has a lot of leverage here, not just to try to, hey, get the biggest, hugest deal and from the Cowboys, but that's a good position just to be in. I think if he were to get to the market, there would be a big market for him. Now, at the end of the day, does he want to be the Cowboys quarterback? I would think so. I don't think Dak Prescott's just about the money. I think he would like to stay there, probably. But there's enough variables that, like, I wouldn't fault either one of them if they said, hey, look, we both like each other. We want to be here, but we're both evaluating some things. Let's see how the season goes. I think that would be fun.
So in your quarterback tiers, of course, you talk to executives and people around the league. What's a league-wide view of Dak Prescott? How's he fit into this list?
Dak Prescott is like an airplane that goes at 36,000 feet forever. I mean, he's been a tier two quarterback. He might be, like, when Dak came into the league and I was getting quarterback tiers going, kind of the Staffords and Matt Ryans were your classic tier two guys. In any one year, if they got with the right coach or whatever, they could be like the MVP. They could put up MVP type numbers, but they weren't quite, you know, at that time, Brady or Breeze or the really super top guys. And that's kind of where Dak is now. He is the Matt Ryan, right, of his era, who is always going to be good. I mean, he plays almost all the games. He's going to have a chance to go to the Pro Bowl. I think one of the comments in my piece was he can roll out of bed and throw for 450 yards. But he hasn't had that success at the end of the year and has faltered even in some of those situations. And so I think that has stopped him from going higher in the tiers. But we've seen what he does has great value. The top two guys in tier three, Tua Tagovailoa and Trevor Lawrence, they're in tier three, just got like 53 and 55 million.
It's crazy. We'll talk about the salaries in a moment, but at the top of the tiers, you have three. And again, this is executives, this is coaches, this is front office personnel, this is analytic types. You really do a wide swath here, but this is not players. So this is the tier one, according to the insider executives, is Patrick Mahomes, is Joe Burrow, and Josh Allen. That's it. only those three. I found it interesting that when the players were surveyed for the NFL Network Top 100, Lamar Jackson was the first quarterback in that ranking. He was second overall in the league. How do you account for that much of a variable where the players think that he's the best, but the executives say he's the top of tier two?
Well, there was only three in tier one this year. Usually there has been more, but he's the fourth quarterback in the whole thing, and he has, I think he's two or three votes away from getting into tier one. So he's right there. I think what has held him back and really confounded the voters is that when one of the key components of being in tier one is when our team has to pass the ball, what does it look like? Who's more afraid, us or them? And I think that when he has gotten into those situations, typically he doesn't because they play great team ball. They're a top five defense usually. They're a top five special teams. They're rarely in a trailing situation where they have to put it on the quarterback's back and the run game isn't part of it. So that has hurt him sometimes, and I think it's one of the reasons he's 2-4 in the playoffs. I think his playoff passer rating is about 75, and we saw what it looked like against Kansas City. That being said, a lot of the voters said, you know what? I kind of want to throw it, he's so good, I want to set aside that pure pass component, which is a little nuanced, but I think it is a differentiator. I think the quarterback position at its hardest is, we know you're going to pass the ball right now in a critical situation. Are you great at it? And so, you know, you could debate either way because about half the voters put Lamar in tier one anyway. And some of the comments in there reveal that, hey, I don't care. I'm putting him in tier one anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think it's nice, though, that he's a top five quarterback. It's not like he's behind some of these other guys. It's just a nice position to me to still differentiate what the tiers are. But he's still a top four quarterback in the league. Easy.
All right, Mike. Lamar Jackson's easy compared to one player. What are the differing opinions on 49ers quarterback Brock Purdy?
Well, I think everybody thinks Brock Purdy is good. It's just the division of credit there is a harder one for the 49ers because if we were to go to Pro Football Reference and pull up like the all-time pass leaders in, you know, yards per attempt and some of these other things, like Jimmy Garoppolo would be super high, right? Because it's a very efficient offense. But yet we know from the eye test, and the market will tell us, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo is not Dan Marino or you know, an all-time great quarterback, and yet they're able to produce those numbers. However, at a certain point, if you play consistently well, even in a great system with great people around you, you're going to get some credit. So Brock Purdy's getting that. I mean, he has one full season as a starter, and he's already up into tier two. So I feel like that's a good spot for him. And if he were to keep doing it, he's just going to rise up higher. Now, do people feel like he can carry the team the way Josh Allen can? You know, probably not. And some of his draft pedigree, probably he has to overcome, right? You come in, there's a reason you're a seventh round pick or whatever. It's not like people would drop the ideal quarterback of all time and say, or look at Brock Purdy and go, that's what it looks like, right? They wouldn't do that. So it may take a little bit of time and we'll see how high he can go, but he's on a great path.
Mike Sando's joining us. He's a writer for The Athletic and every year does his quarterback tiers. Exhaustive. You're talking to all these decision makers in the league, executives, GMs, coaches, analytic people, staffers on every single level, sort of get a composite of who belongs on tiers 1, 2, 3, 4. And there is a tier 5, but I don't think anyone really fell into that one. Rookies don't count, by the way. We haven't seen them play yet. For Mike, for the players who dropped into different tiers, and there were a couple and they were rather, you know, some were pretty precipitous. Which fan base should be the most concerned about their quarterback dropping down a tier or two?
Well, I think it's really a big year in Jacksonville. I don't think people question Trevor Lawrence's talent, but something's been a little bit of a miss there, right? You have the Super Bowl winning offensive coach, yet there's been some ambiguity over who is or should be calling the plays. They fired their defensive staff last year, but I think everybody's looking at the offense. Was it just Trevor Lawrence having a few injuries after they started 8-3? Maybe. I think long-term he's going to be good, but wait a minute. When he came into the league, I thought people were talking about generational talent, and he's one of these rare guys. I don't think we've seen that. So are they a situation where, like, if you look at the top of Tier 3, from Tua, Lawrence, Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson, a lot of hopes and dreams and money were put into those guys. And And so is Trevor Lawrence going to rise out of that and be up there with the Herberts and the Staffords and some of these other guys? Or is he now going to be an expensive tier three guy, you know, like some of these others?
Mike, one quarterback you know very well is Russell Wilson. We've been talking a lot about the Wilson-Fields battle in Pittsburgh. From what you found out doing this story, who gives you more of an upside if you're the Steelers? Is it Russell Wilson or is it Justin Fields?
Well, definitely the upside of the talent is Fields. I think what made Russell Wilson special for a lot of his career was he not only had a really good feel for the game, but he was athletic. And so he could break the rules, right? You would never teach your quarterback when the pass rush is coming to turn his back to it and look over this shoulder while he's running and then spin out the other way. Like, you can't teach that. And now that Russell Wilson doesn't have, he's older, he can't do that as well. He's really lost the knockout punch, right? He's always taken too many sacks and some of that thing, but you didn't care because he was going to roll out and throw the ball 40 yards down the field or scramble for 20 yards and make these incredible plays. As his athleticism has waned, what you're left with is just a little bit more of hopefully a game manager type of player. He throws a great deep ball, but he's sort of going to manage the offense. That may appeal to a team like Pittsburgh because they've been good on defense. They may not need, they just may need a quarterback who isn't bad, right? Now with Fields, you're going to get the super highs and lows. The upside's higher, but he can also, he probably isn't as experienced or just isn't able to probably manage an offense or hasn't done that as well as Russell Wilson has. So I think that's the choice for them. And ideally, Russell Wilson would play pretty well. They would be able to win and develop Justin Fields in an offense that's new for him with a coordinator who would seem to fit him. And then maybe as we get later in the year, they can make a decision, or maybe next year they feel good about him being part of it. Because I think people, when I talk, you know, there's enough people that feel like there's something there to be salvaged with Justin Fields. That's where the upside would be, even if, like, right now today, there's maybe a little more downside too.
But, Mike, I keep telling Maggie, we're arguing about this all summer, Russell Wilson had all those deep passes through the years. It feels like he's the guy to throw the deep ball to George Pickens to me. Isn't he one of the more effective deep passers in NFL history? But is that no longer a thing?
No, I think he still can throw the deep ball. In fact, I've talked to people that have seen him practice this summer. It's like, hey, he's still got the deep ball. So I think he can throw the deep ball. That may be something that never leaves him. I think I made a boxing analogy earlier. It's like a puncher, like George Foreman today would like knock you. George Foreman won the heavyweight title at age 42 when he was totally overweight because the punch never leaves you. And I think the deep ball, some of these quarterbacks, like if we got Warren Moon and Dan Marino out there, I bet they could drop a deep ball still. So I think that won't necessarily leave Russell Wilson.
Gosh, a Russell Wilson, George Foreman comparison. I don't think I've ever heard that one, but that's great. That's why we love.
I got the boxing stuff here. We got Ali over here. I got a little bit of a background,
Yeah, I love your background. If you can't see on TV, you got some Chuck Knoll, some Lombardi. Is there a strategy here, Mike? What's the book strategy here? A lot of great coaches.
It's just a mix of some sports books with some iconic figures.
Yeah, and your book too, by the way.
Dan Pompey and I wrote a book on the 100 greatest players in history that we had to change. We actually, when we were putting it together, I think we had Jim Brown number one, and then Brady went and won the thing with Tampa, and we were like, all right, okay, he did this. This is ridiculous. So we moved Brady to number one on that book, had to rewrite it.
Are you going to rewrite it if the Chiefs three-peat? Are you going to dig back into the book?
That was another rewrite. So when we started it, it was too early to put Mahomes in there. Like, he had just played a few years. We're like, God, this guy's going to be in there. But we didn't do it. And we actually put him in there. We actually put him, low somewhere in there in the 90, I can't remember what it was, 90-something. And so, yeah, if we redid it now. The thing about Mahomes, this is what's different about Mahomes. Different from Joe Montana, different from Terry Bradshaw, different from Tom Brady. If you look at his 2019 and 22 Super Bowl teams, they weren't good defensive teams. And it's all these top-tier quarterbacks can overcome, a bad defense to have a good team. We saw Peyton Manning do that. We saw Aaron Rodgers do that. We saw Drew Brees do that. But it's very hard to win it all without a good defense. If you look at in the 1980s, the team that allowed the fewest points was the 49ers, stacked on defense. Okay. Tom Brady, great defenses. Mahomes had a great defense this last year. I mean, they wouldn't have probably won it, or it would have been harder. But he's got two rings overcoming defense, overcoming special teams. It doesn't work that way to win it all. So that's why I think he's really on that track. And if we were to redo that book in a couple of years, the top 100 book that's right there, you'd have to start. There's enough of a body of work that we're not talking about being in it. We're talking like, where is he in the top 10? You know, I think he'd start having that type of discussion.
Mike, really appreciate it. Love the quarterback tiers. Anyone who hasn't read it yet, dive in and have it. We'll talk to you during the season, I hope.
I hope so, too. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate that.
Yeah, that is really interesting to me. Also, we didn't even get into where Aaron Rodgers goes in there. Still pretty high. This is, Maggie, you say this, you know, if you don't have a quarterback, you don't have an upcoming season. So this is really, to me, you could have this debate about the best quarterbacks. You're really debating the best teams.
Yeah, so Rodgers is in tier two, dropped down from tier one. He's nestled in between Justin Herbert and Matthew Stafford, who are tied for fifth, and C.J. Stroud, who's at eight. Stroud just a one spot above Dak Prescott. The other part about this, I was really surprised by this. So tier three, Mike was talking about, the top of tier three, these are guys who just all got paid. Tua, Trevor Lawrence, Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson. I mean, insane, and Baker Mayfield even got an extension. Really big money for those guys at the top. Bryce Young's in tier three. Like, how?
That's hot. Yeah.
That season last year was terrible. It might not have been all his fault, but it's never all anyone's fault, you know, unless you're like Nathan Peterman or someone who's not even making this list. I just think that how did Bryce Young get into tier three? Obviously, there's still some optimism amongst executives out there that he's going to become a thing.
Yeah, I don't think Nathan Peterman deserved a shot there. It's good, dude. By the way, and even he is better at playing quarterback than anybody listening will be at anything in the rest of their lives.
I know.
That being said, I hear you about the Deshaun Watson's funny too. It's just there's so many good quarterbacks right now. I hate to say this because everyone says, oh, there's no good quarterbacks anymore. That you can go into 20s and have Super Bowl champions is interesting. All right, coming up next, let's shift our attention to wide receivers. So CeeDee Lamb got paid. Does that mean that finally, Maggie, Brandon Ayuk will get a contract? We'll break it down next. Maggie and Perloff Show.